Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Saturday show at Northwest Federal. And, of course, this has been a big day in sports with many top college games. And tomorrow it'll be a big day in pro football. And the Chicago Bears are on the road tomorrow. They're up at Minnesota. And that should be quite a game. Minnesota is not exactly a powerhouse anymore with Tarkington not there. So I would say that the Bears have a chance in that game. Anyway, there's a lot of interesting games on Sunday, and I believe there are two pro games that will be seen on television. So anyway, a lot of interesting excitement now. The World Series is over, and that was a terrific series. Anytime you go to the seventh game, you know you've had a terrific series, and there were two great teams, and either one of the teams could have won it. But today we're going to talk about baseball, and that's why I mentioned the World Series, with Don Unferth of the White Sox, who's a busy man out there. And I guess if you try to identify his job, he's a jack-of-all-trades, maybe a director of public relations and so on. Anyway, he does a fine job. He's a very good friend of ours, and we'll be talking baseball with Don, and we'll be back in just about 1 minute. You know, I always hate to see the baseball season end, and even though it's a long season now, a lot of people think that most seasons are too long, that they should cut baseball back maybe to 140 games instead of the present number. But it's true in every sport, and that's why they all overlap. Don, do you recall when it was what, 140 or 142?
154 was what it was, Bob, when I came to the White Sox. That was in 1948. And I like that schedule, 154, because we played each team 22 times, 11 at home, 11 away, and you really got a good gauge on your ability against each of those teams. I agree with you. I think it's a little bit too long, and I wish we could cut back.
Yes, 154 and 22 with each team. That was a nice arrangement.
You got a real champion that way. The team that ended up on top in those days was really deserved it because they played everybody an equal number of times and proved their championship.
Don, who started the rumor that Bill Veeck was going to retire?
Gosh, I don't know. I know Milt Richmond, the UPI sports editor in New York, came out with a story recently, but that was more or less of a rehash of something that came out down in the Atlanta paper about 6 months ago that the Denver oil man, Mr. Davis, was interested in purchasing the White Sox. Well, I'm sure he is interested, and he's interested in purchasing any team that he could get. But you and I both, I think, agree that Chicago will always have an American League entry.
Yes, I don't think the league would let them move out of Chicago. And I hate to see Veeck get out of baseball. I think he's a good influence. His whole life is wrapped up in the game. And I can't imagine him being out of baseball and being happy.
I can't either. He's worked so hard at trying to make it interesting for the fans and also to improve the ball club. And the ball club is improving. And now with our young pitchers maturing and with the fact that we're going to have Ed Farmer, our fine relief pitcher, and a healthy Mike Proley all season next year, plus Jim Morrison at second base, we've got a promising future ahead for next year. So I certainly hope nothing happens to either Bill or the team.
Yeah, you know, the young pitching staff on the White Sox, that could develop into one of the best pitching staffs in baseball.
I certainly think so. We've got four fine left-handers. The oldest is Ken Kravick, and he's quite a ways short of 30 yet. And incidentally, Bob, I was working on some stats the other day and found an interesting thing. I keep one stat which we call low-hit games, which are games which your pitching staff pitches, which are four or less hits for the opposition. We had 23 low-hit games last year where we held the opposition to four or less hits, and the opposition against us only had 11. Of those 23 low-hit games that we pitched, Ken Kravick started eight of them. That's more than one-third. So I would be very careful about trading Mr. Kravick.
Oh, there's no talk about doing that, is there?
Well, Boston's talking about it. They're trying to either give us Dwight Evans, an outfielder, or Butch Hobson, a third baseman, for Ken. But I can't see that. One of those fellows is a good fielder. It might not hit in Comiskey Park, and the other fellow is a good hitter in Fenway Park, but not too good a fielder, and he might not hit in Comiskey Park. So I think Ken ought to stay right where he is.
Where did Morrison come from? He had quite an impact.
Well, Morrison was in the Philadelphia Phillies chain, and of course he was a third baseman originally, and he had quite a bit of competition with Mr. Schmidt over at the Phillies, and so they switched him to second base, and he was coming along pretty good, and then they made the trade last year with the Cubs where they got Trio. And so that sent him back to Oklahoma City. Well, he was outstanding at Oklahoma City, but he didn't like playing there again because he had been there for several years and done real well. And so he demanded or requested to be traded to some club where he could play. The Phillies owed us a ball player for Jack Cusick, who we sent to them in the spring. And so the White Sox were able to talk the Phillies into giving us Jim Morrison last July. And he's been a godsend. He had 14 home runs since the 14th of July. And he certainly shows that he's going to be our second baseman next year.
Yes, he was a tremendous ball player. That really was one of the highlights of the season for the Sox.
Well, it was. And I was figuring out slugging percentages the other day of our players. And Chet Lemon, who had a fine year and hit .318, led the club in slugging percentage with .496. But, you know, I figured out Morrison, he didn't play long enough, of course, to qualify for the slugging percentage leadership. But he had .508 slugging percentage. He had better than anybody on the team for the time that he was with the club. He had 14 home runs and 14 doubles among his hits. So he was did an outstanding job for us and also fielded very well.
Don, what happens with a major league ball club, let's say, like the club you're associated with the White Sox during the offseason? What's going on out there now?
Well, there's several things coming up that we've been preparing for. Of course, the big thing is the winter meetings, which will be at Toronto the first week of December. There's a lot of homework you have to do before you go to that meeting because the draft takes place then, and a lot of legislation is acted upon there. Also, that includes the minor league clubs which attend that meeting. So our farm clubs will all be there, too. We lost the Knoxville club after this past season, so we've got to get a new AA affiliate, and we will be back at Appleton. Yesterday, we announced that Gordy Howe would return there as our manager. Gordy's a Chicago boy, a Northside Chicago boy, and he's going to return there.
Pretty well-known hockey name.
that's right, Gordy Lund. Did I say Howe? you got me thinking hockey. It's Gordy Lund. Excuse me, Gordy Lund. The hockey player. I hope some of our players last as long as Gordy Howe has lasted. But another thing that's getting ready for, the general managers have a big meeting down at Phoenix, Arizona next week. That'll last all next week, so there'll be a lot of news coming out of there. And then the sale of the Baltimore club is coming up for approval Monday in New York, so that's another thing. So it's a busy time in the office.
Well, does Bill get away and get involved in all these things?
He goes to some of them, and then we have, of course, an old name that you will remember very well, Bill DeWitt, who represents us at many of the meetings. He's the chairman of our board, and he owned the Tigers, and he owned the Reds, and so on, so he's an experienced
man. Knows plenty about baseball.
Right, and he represents us at a lot of these meetings.
Well, what's happening now? You know, occasionally you hear talk of maybe baseball is going to expand, and I think expansion would be the worst thing in the world for baseball. I think that they're pretty well set now, don't you?
Oh, yes. I would hate to see expansion because by expanding you dilute the product, as you know, and you have your fine ball players, but there are players playing in the majors today who should be really in triple or double A, as we used to call it back in the minors. But because of so many clubs, 26 ball clubs today instead of the 16 we used to have, they have to fill the positions, and so your product is diluted to some extent. Further expansion would create more dilution and make the product more inferior, so let's hope not.
Don, with the almost a demise of the minor league structure, how many scouts does a major league club like the White Sox have to have out? There are not many minor league games they can see, are there?
Well, there's between 15 and 20 minor leagues, and compared to about 30 years ago, we had 60 minor leagues, so there's a great reduction in the minor leagues. So you don't need as many scouts, but we still have to have a nucleus of 8 or 10 full-time scouts and some bird dogs. There's also, in effect, what they call the National Scouting System. We used to belong to that, but we don't belong to that anymore. More and more clubs have gotten away from it, and we prefer to have our own scouts. So we have a core of key men scouting the different parts of the country, and that would consist of, say, about a dozen altogether.
How many people did the Sox draw last year?
We drew 1,280,000, which, when you consider we finished in fifth place and were never in the race, I'd say was excellent. The fan support was outstanding. We dropped from 1,491,000 the year before, but that's understandable when you consider that we were not in the race. And with Baltimore running away with the Eastern Division, that really wasn't too much of a race in that division. So we drew real well. We drew 1,280,000, and that is one of our better attendances, of course.
I think Harry Carey does a fine job of putting people in the ballpark.
Yes, he has. He's a great entertainer and a great enthusiasm, and he has two partners who work well with him. Jimmy Pearsall supplements him very well, and Lauren Brown gives you the statistical end of it, and So the three of them make a pretty good triumvirate to carry our ball games. I don't know what's going to happen next year. As you know, WMAQ and the White Sox parted company, and so it'll be interesting to see who does carry our games next year.
Can you remember when we had that over 100-station network going all the way down to Florida and across the southern part of the United States to Texas?
I sure do, Bob. That was some network. And you and Milo Hamilton and Bob Finnegan and so on, and Don Wells worked in those days. Yes, we really blanketed the nation in those days.
You know, speaking of Milo Hamilton, he broadcast the Pittsburgh games, and he was with me for about 7 years with the White Sox. I think he's an outstanding announcer. And then when Pittsburgh won, he didn't get a chance to broadcast a series on the network. Same thing happened to me in 1959 when the Sox won. I didn't get a chance to do the... You know, that isn't right. I would think that a ball club would stand up for their announcer and insist that he be part of the network setup.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with you, Bob, and I well remember when we finally won the pennant in 59 and you had suffered through all those lean years with the White Sox when we were a perennial second division, and finally you get the big plum and then you didn't get it, and that was a shame, and the same certainly applies to Milo Hamilton. I see Milo every spring. In spring training, the Pirates train 10 miles from the White Sox, and he's a fine announcer, one of the best in the business, and it was a shame that he didn't get it. Also, the same goes for Chuck Thompson of the Orioles. He should have been in on it. He and Milo should have done the radio end of it.
I would think that the clubs would go to bat and take that up with the commissioner. That the clubs, the guys who are with the club all year long and were with them for years and live and die with them, and they should be doing the games. It just isn't right.
I agree. And they also are much more well-informed on those ball clubs. And to bring in an outside announcer, particularly bringing in somebody that doesn't even do play-by-play during the regular season, certainly sort of makes a travesty of the announcing of the World Series, which is the big event.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll change that. Anyway, our guest today is Don Unferth of the Chicago White Sox. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today, we're talking baseball with an old friend and a very good friend, Don Unferth, who does a great job of public relations with the Chicago White Sox. Don, the schedule for next year, when are the schedules, how far ahead of the season are they made up, and who's on the scheduling committee?
Well, the committee is made up of people from the commissioner's office, and the schedule, Bob, is out now, but it's not out for publication yet. Although we do know and are able to tell that we are going to open with the American League champion, Baltimore Club, in Comiskey Park April 10th. That'll be our home opener. Incidentally, that first homestand is going to be something. They'll be followed in after four games by the New York Yankees. So our first homestand will be seven games with the Orioles and the Yankees, so it's something to look forward to.
There's some money in the tail, too.
Yes, now if we just get some weather like we're having today, weather of that type, we should draw real well.
How soon do they start printing tickets?
The tickets will be printed very soon, as soon as the schedule is confirmed. They are already taking orders. The orders can be made already by calling the ballpark or by mail. And then they'll be given preference according to the way they come in. But the tickets will be printed as soon as the schedule is confirmed.
What about the uniforms and the supply of baseballs? How often do they change uniforms? I mean, not day by day, but I mean change the uniforms and get new ones.
Well, it seems to me that happens whenever, particularly if you've had a bad year, in order to get a new, entirely new picture, they seem to change the uniforms. I know we changed when Chuck Tanner and Roland Heeman took over the club in 1971, and gee, we had some colorful uniforms there for 3-4 years. Then we had the bad year, and Roland Heeman still is with us, of course, but Chuck Tanner left us. And so we changed uniforms again when Bill took over the club. So it seems as though whenever there's a new ownership, whenever you've had a real bad season, they want to create a new image, then you get new uniforms. And that seems to work out pretty good.
I hear fans say they don't like the design of the uniforms, but I do. I think they look real smart.
Well, I know one thing. They're comfortable. It was a dramatic change to have the blouse out like it is. But the players like it that way because they have more freedom. It hasn't really paid off in the one loss column for us, but the players do tell us that they are much more comfortable with that type of uniform. I notice more and more clubs have gone to the knit type of uniform, and particularly you notice Pittsburgh in the World Series, the variety of uniforms that Chuck Tanner's team had. Incidentally, Bob, wasn't that great, Chuck Tanner, winning the championship?
Yeah, I was delighted for him. He's just a marvelous, marvelous guy. I was always very fond of him. You know, Tanner never changes. He's the same all the time.
That's right, and when we had him, of course, he got the most of any manager ever got out of Dick Allen. He was criticized to some extent because of the way he coddled Dick Allen, but that was the one way to get peak production and to prove how right he was. Dick Allen was the most valuable player in the American League in 1972. Now this year, Willie Stargell did the same thing for him.
Now you're talking really about a wonderful man when you talk about Willie Stargell. He is a complete wonderful human being. I don't know what went wrong with Allen. Nobody ever knows. He certainly had a world of talent. I don't know. I don't think he was really dedicated to the game as Stargell is.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that, Bob. If Allen had Stargell's temperament, he'd be in the Hall of Fame because he had the ability. But Willie Stargell is the complete player, the all-around. And it seems that he fitted in very well with Tanner's same outlook on life and on how to get along with ballplayers.
Well, he's a good guy to come after a wonderful ballplayer like Roberto Clemente. There was one of my, he and DiMaggio are my all-time two favorite ballplayers. Two wonderful guys, and Clemente was, what talent he had. Did you ever see him pick a ball up down in that right field corner and make a long throw to the plate right on the...
There was none better, was there, Bob?
No.
They say old shoeless Joe Jackson used to do that. Johnny Mostel used to tell me that that's what Jackson would do in Comiskey Park from the left field corner, throw a strike to home plate, but that was Clemente, too.
Well, you'll believe it or not, but I never saw Jack.
Well, I know Milo Hamilton would disagree with you.
Yeah. Now, Jackson must have been a wonderful ball player, and I know he was a tremendous hitter.
Yes, Johnny Mostel says he was probably the best natural hitter he ever saw or played with or against. But, of course, we've got our own favorites. And my favorite, Bob, is one I'm sure that you remember well in broadcast games that he played in, was Rogers Hornsby. What a hitter he was.
Well, that's one of the, I thought he was the best right-hand hitter I ever saw, and I thought Williams was the best left-hand hitter I ever saw.
I agree. Those were my two choices.
You know, Hornsby hit over 400 twice with a dead ball.
Well, over a five-year period in the 1920s, he averaged over 400. And, of course, today, hitting 300 is quite an accomplishment.
You've heard that story. They wouldn't even go to a movie for fear they would affect his eyes.
Yes, yes, right.
He could see the horses.
Yeah, well, that's what Judge Landis told him, didn't he? And Bob, you were a good friend of the judge's.
I sure was. I love that man.
You could tell some wonderful stories about Landis. I know Ed Burns and Irving Vaughn, the old Tribune writers, used to tell me about Judge Landis.
Yeah. Landis was a great man. He was a wonderful commissioner. Always used to wear that battered gray hat, and always with popcorn. I was doing a ball game at Wrigley Field one day, and he called me over, and he was sitting in the front row and eating popcorn. And I said, "Yes, Judge." He says, "No, Bob, lean down real close here. This is in strict confidence." And now when he says that, I'm wondering what he's going to tell me. He says, "Bob, do you know there's a law they can't bring butter within 50 miles of Wrigley Field?"
Well, that was the judge. Yes,
he had a great sense of humor.
Yes, and I can still picture him sitting in Comiskey Park in the front row with his hands down on the rail and his chin resting on his hands. Yes, he was something.
He really loved the game, and you know he was a tough guy, but he was a great human being. You know, two ball clubs in the major leagues, he released all their free agents.
Yes, one of them was the Tigers. I remember that.
The other was St. Louis.
Yes, they lost up to 100 ball players because of his rulings.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, the game has changed quite a bit, Bob, but it's still a wonderful game as the World Series.
Well, I think it is, too, and I think the present commissioner, Bowie Kuhn, is doing a fine job. I really think he, when you see him and you talk to him and you know he's the commissioner of baseball, you think, well, baseball is in good hands. He's a high-class man. He's a fine lawyer. And I think he reflects very creditably on baseball.
Well, I think so, too. And you have to have a man of his intelligence and background, especially in law, with the present situation in baseball, with the free agent situation, and with the players having so much more power than they used to have, and also with the salary structure as it is today, which is really almost ridiculous.
Now the contract between the players and the owners has come to an end, and they will have to negotiate for a new one. You foresee any radical change? Will it affect this free agent business?
Well, the contract expires, as you said, Bob, at the end of this year, and a new agreement between the players and the owners will have to be negotiated. They're working on that now. It's being done quietly, and I don't know at what stage they are, but I'm sure that they'll get together. Both sides may have to give in some to some extent on different issues, but come next March, I'm sure we'll have spring training again and get ready for the season.
Now with baseball over, how do they keep a restless guy like Bill Veeck quiet?
Well, Bill does a lot of speaking yet, you know. He's busy, like he was at San Diego the other day, and a short time before that he was out in Colorado, and that wasn't to see Mr. Davis, but he was on a speaking engagement. So he keeps busy that way, and he's always busy with Roland Heeman trying to figure out how they can outfox some other club and get away some ball player like Jim Morrison, and they're working on that now, and we'll see the results of that. You know, starting Monday, the interleague trading begins, and then when we get, and that'll run right through the convention the first week of December. So I'm sure we'll see some action, and also the free agent policy comes up the 2nd of November, when the players who have signified that they're going to play out their options this year will become free agents. Now we have three on our roster that have the option of doing that: George Orta, and Rusty Torres, and the catcher, Milt May. Those three have the option of declaring themselves free agents November the 2nd. So we have three players there that we could lose. We could lose all three, but of course, when they do declare themselves free agents, we also can bid on getting them back. So that doesn't mean that they're gone.
Now, to be a contender, what do you feel is the real White Sox need?
Well, Greg Pryor did a fine job for us as a utility man and also filling in at shortstop last year. I don't know whether he can go the whole season at shortstop and give us the great defensive play that White Sox fans have been accustomed to with Carrascal and Aparicio, and before that, Luke Appling. But catching, I think we need help in the catching department, and we do need a good right-handed starter. Now, Francisco Berrios had a shoulder operation at the end of the season, and it's possible that he will come back and be that right-handed starter. We could still use another one. We could use a left-handed relief pitcher in the bullpen. Now, Guy Hoffman, the youngster from Ottawa, Illinois, may eventually be that, but it may be 1 year too quick for that yet, because a year ago he was playing in the Peoria Sunday Morning League, and to jump to the majors that quick is tough. But those would be the prime requirements, I would think, for this coming season.
You know, almost every club, there's a shortage of big league good catchers.
Yes. We have a real fine prospect in Mike Colburn, and his question will be his hitting, of course. He was an outstanding athlete at Arizona State and has shown promise. Now, he could be the answer in the long run. Marvis Foley also is a good receiver and a pretty good left-handed hitter. So these boys could improve still more next year and be the solution.
Yes, and all in all, I think the White Sox picture is an optimistic picture, especially with these young pitchers. You know, I've heard in my baseball career of 40 years that pitching is 75. People feel it's 80% of the game. And the Sox in the pitching department should be in real good shape.
Yes, with our preponderance of left-handers, we incidentally, Bob, we got a couple more coming up, and they'll be going on the roster, I imagine, or at least be in spring training.
I was doing an interview show one day with Paul Richards, and I said to him, "What's the ideal pitching staff, Paul?" He said, "Seven lefties."
Well, you remember, Bob, when we had Mickey Hefner and fellows like that? We did have Bob Kane and Billy Pierce, and so we had five or six left-handers that were all starters at that time. So it's happened.
Our guest today, and we're talking baseball with an old friend, one of the nice guys with the White Sox, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to be talking baseball with Don Unferth of the White Sox, who does a fine job out there in that organization. You know, I meant to tell Bill Veeck, the last time I saw him, and that I really appreciated a very thoughtful thing he did. And that is, in the program, they kept that whole column about me getting into the Hall of Fame. And from the time that I got in, which was August the 5th, they kept that in the White Sox program all season long. And I thought that was very thoughtful.
Well, it's certainly, it was thoughtful, Bob, and it was certainly well-deserved because I've having been with the Sox almost 32 years, I remember your broadcasting there. I just wanted to tell a little story here. In 1940, you probably won't remember this, but you were the guest of honor at the state high school basketball tournament at Madison, Wisconsin. They had a fellow out there by the name of Billy Reed playing with the Shawano high school team. They won the state championship that year. And I was an announcer. I was broadcasting that state tournament. And here you were there as the guest of honor, and I met you at that time. It was the first time I met you. And so I've always admired your broadcasting ever since, and it was a delight to us. And we were really pulling for you to be in the Hall of Fame, and there was no announcer in the country more deserving. And I say that sincerely.
Well, I appreciate that very much, and I tell you, it was some honor. I'll never forget that day at Cooperstown. Have you ever been to Cooperstown?
Yes, Bob. Been there three different times when we played exhibitions there, and the last time was when Henry Aaron was there, and he got a base hit off Larry Monroe. And Larry Monroe will never forget that.
Well, it's a delightful place, and I say this to all baseball fans. Take a weekend and go to Cooperstown. The area is so beautiful. It's just unbelievable. And you could spend 3 days there in the library and the museum. They have a half a floor dedicated to Babe Ruth, and it's one of the really bright spots for a baseball fan in the country.
I certainly agree. I've taken my family there, Bob, and it's just an outstanding place to visit.
Don, thanks so much for being with us again today, and I hope the Sox have a great year next year. Give my very best to Bill Veeck.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure.
Our guest today, Don Unferth, who's the Director of Public Relations for the White Sox. A lot of football, remember, on the tube tomorrow and on radio. But have a nice day, whatever you do. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.